I welcome you back to our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word, and invite you to join me in Joshua chapter number 12, verse number 1. Now, I must confess, this section of our teaching, this section of our study, is so very difficult because we have words that reference places. And we, in our Western modern mindset, are much more used to looking at maps when we're talking about something like this. But this is an audio teaching rather than a video teaching, so I can't point to things on maps. I have to describe them as best I can. And so that is really hard for me to communicate well. So I ask that you would please bear with me as I try to do my best to verbalize the description here for you. Now, if you can, while you're studying this, have a map of the ancient Middle East, that's going to help you a little bit. But we run into another problem, and that is many of these places that are listed are not yet certainly located. A lot of them are, which helps us with those that are not so well known, because we know they're in the general vicinity of a place we already know well. But it leads to a lot of people having to kind of guess or speculate where some of these places are located. And so I do the same thing. I do speculation, and I try to point that out as we do it. If you have access to a nice topographical map, I always like to recommend just going to Google Earth and being able to zoom in and out and see some of the land features. It will help a little bit in trying to understand how things are situated for the things we have described here. All right, so enough for asking your indulgence. Now, I want to remind you that when Israel first came in the land, they'd already spent 1 year on the east side of the Jordan, taking territory from two kings. And that territory becomes annexed to the Promised Land. And 2.5 tribes are given their inheritance on that side of the Jordan. But those 2.5 tribes also have to commit to being in the vanguard for the militia, military, that will clear out the land in Canaan on the west side of the Jordan River, the place that's going to be given as an inheritance, the other 9.5 tribes. And it takes probably 3 years to describe the initial fights that go on that we've talked about already. The first year is when they took Jericho and Ai and had their blessing and cursing ceremony at Shechem. The second year is dealing with the southern Canaanite alliance that was defeated. And then I think the third year is the defeat of the northern Canaanite alliance, which was much bigger. Then I believe they had probably 3 years that they were doing mop-up operations here and there, plus focusing on establishing their agricultural activities in the core of their beachhead. So Gilgal up to Ai, and then up to Shechem, and then down to the Jordan Valley again. And all of that area that is a perimeter around, roughly 400 square miles, I think, is what we're talking about. So eventually, though, we get to the springtime of the seventh year that they're in the Promised Land. And we know that in that year, Caleb comes and talks to Joshua about taking over his specific part of the Promised Land that he wants and that Moses promised to him. And that year is very clearly designated by things that Caleb says. And so that becomes kind of an anchor chronologically for what we read starting here in chapter number 12, that they had already taken all of these territories, and now they were getting ready to start divvying it up. And so I want us to start, I think I said chapter 12, but I want us to start in chapter 13. That was a misspeak on my part, sorry. Chapter 13, verse 1, I believe takes place in the spring of the seventh year that they're in the land, which would be 1410 BC. Joshua was old and advanced in years. I think he's probably about 88. That's based on some tradition that comes to us from Josephus as to how old he was when they entered the Promised Land and how many years he led the Israelis. And by the way, that age is very close to Caleb's age. It's just about 3 years older than Caleb. So that makes good sense as well. So he was said to him, you are old and advanced in years. Now, that's not a critique of him being decrepit or something. It's God just stating the fact that he is more than 20 years older than the oldest leaders in the community of Israel inside the Promised Land right now. So he is definitely one of two of the old guys in this leadership council. Verse 1 continues. There remains yet very much land to possess. So even though he is swept through and really wiped out an awful lot of the Canaanites, and he has evicted them from their cities in this big sweep in the first few years, there's still other places they haven't even touched yet. And so that we have a list of that. And this is where it becomes difficult for me, because I have to describe map stuff. This is the land that yet remains. All the regions of the Philistines, that's along the coastline, on the southeast or southwest coastline of the Promised Land, and all those of the Geshurites, who are neighbors to the Philistines, from the Shihor, which I believe is the same as the Wadi of Egypt, or the Wadi al-Arish. And you can see that on a map. If you follow the curve of the coastline of the Promised Land down toward Egypt, just as it's starting to really flatten out to head toward the delta, the Wadi al-Arish dumps into the Mediterranean right there. And that's the south border of the Promised Land. And so the Geshurites seem to live north of there and south and east of the Philistine territory. And so none of that coastline on the southwest corner of the land of Israel has been touched yet in this conquest. So from the Shihor, which is east of Egypt, northward to the boundary of Ekron, that's one of the cities of the Philistines, it is counted as Canaanite. There are five rulers of the Philistines. Those are Gaza, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gath, and Ekron. And you can find those on pretty much any Bible map from this time, and we know exactly where those cities were with great confidence. So all of these together are the Avivim. That's their people group name applied to them. And I'm just trying to remember what it means here. Has something to do with ruins, apparently. So maybe they were looked at as those that came in and kind of took over and lived in the ruins of the cities they took over. Because we know that the Philistines had moved into that region many hundreds of years earlier as invaders. They were part of the Sea Peoples group that were coming out of the Greek and Crete area in order to escape some problems that were happening in the world at that time, and just kind of moved in to this coastline. Verse 4, in the south, all the land of the Canaanites. So a lot of the south land has not been touched yet. Apparently, some of the Arabah that bordered on the hill country in the south has been dealt with, but not all of it. Mira, that belongs to the Sidonians. So now we move north to the extreme north side of the Promised Land. Sidon, the border region around Sidon, hasn't been touched. To Aphek, the Aphek here seems to be an Aphek that was not very far from Haifa Bay. If you see a modern-day map, Haifa is a big city. It's the big bump that comes off of the Mediterranean coastline of Israel. And Aphek was near that little bay. So that apparently hasn't been touched either. To the boundary of the Amorites, the land of the Gebelites. Now, we know where Gebel is. Gebel is what we call today Byblos. It's pretty far north from Sidon. And so that was apparently part of the original Promised Land. And this is something I've been recently coming to the acceptance of, is that the Promised Land went a lot farther north than perhaps Israel occupied at the very beginning of their time in the Promised Land. And then all Lebanon toward the sunrise, from Baal Gad, below Mount Hermon. And so we know where Mount Hermon is. That's easy to locate. Baal Gad is to the west of it and is lower than it, but it appears to be a hill, a prominent hill or mountain, probably a ridgeline, that is in the extreme south part of the Bekaa Valley, at which that matches the idea of we're now in Lebanon. And it goes from there all the way to Lebo Hamat. Now, for a very long time, I believe Lebo Hamat was very close to Dan, that it was kind of the entry point to the Bekaa Valley, that it was part of the northern borderline of what Israel occupied as their Promised Land. But I am now starting to come to the conclusion that those who place Lebo Hamat way far north, as in on the northern end of the Bekaa Valley, were probably correct. Lebo Hamat is probably just a little ways east from Byblos or Gebel. I've come to the conclusion that all of the Bekaa Valley was originally part of the Promised Land given by God to the Israelis because of the sins of the Canaanites living in that region. And it wasn't until the time of David that they actually occupied it. Verse number 6, all the inhabitants of the hill country from Lebanon, which I think that's a representation of the Bekaa Valley, to Misrafot Mayim, which has something to do with burning waters, and so it's probably a river system south of Sidon, empties into the Mediterranean. And it's probably very close to the bottom or the south part of the Baca Valley. Even all the Sidonians. Now, Sidon, the city, which at this time was just an island and then the coastline near that island. That was the city-state of Sidon. And then the city-state of Tyre. God had already told the Israelis, you may not have that. That is independent territory. But all of the areas nearby, they were given as part of their promised land. And so that is mentioned right here. Now, God makes the promise there that he's promised before. I myself will drive them out from before the people of Israel. Now, he made that conditional. If they keep the covenant, I will drive the Canaanites out of cities, out of areas, so that the Israelis can move in as needed, because they weren't going to occupy the entirety of their inheritance at the very beginning. They were going to spread out into it, is what God had said earlier. And then comes the allotment comment. Only allot the land to Israel for an inheritance as I have commanded you. Now, therefore, divide this land for an inheritance to the nine tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh. So the next thing that we read, and I'm not going to read every bit of it, I'm just going to reference it. Verses 8 all the way down to verse number, let's see, where are we at? Verse 33 at the end of the chapter describes how God had already, through Moses, given the east side of the Jordan Valley and the east side of the Sea of Galilee and the east side of the waters of Merom, there at the foot of Mount Hermon. All of that had already been given as inheritance to the three or the two and a half tribes that requested that they be given that side as their inheritance. Verse 32 says, these are the inheritances Moses distributed in the plains of Moab beyond the Jordan east of Jericho. So all of that inheritance distribution took place in the 40th year of the Exodus. So that's already several years old. Verse 33, a little reminder, but to the tribe of Levi, Moses gave no inheritance. He who is God of Israel is their inheritance, just as he said to them. Now they also are going to be given cities scattered throughout all the tribes, both on the east side and the west side of the Jordan. And they will be given around those Levitical cities, land, rural area to grow crops. And so they will be little pockets of Levites everywhere, but there won't be a Levitical tribal area. Okay, so the eastern side, already taken care of. That's already been divvied up. But Joshua has now been told by God, it's time for you to start divvying up the land on the west side, the land you just cleared out in your first go-through with the militia army. Chapter 14. These are the inheritances that the people of Israel received in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the fathers' houses of the tribes of the people of Israel gave them to inherit. So you have to picture a process happening here. The scripture says, the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision belongs to he who is. That's a much later proverb based on the idea that when you ask God in a special situation to give an answer about what is appropriate, when he answers, that's the decision of God. Now, the high priest wears on his uniform a mechanism by which such a lot can take place. It's called the Urim and the Thummim. Two stones in a pocket right behind the breastplate, the breastpiece of the high priest. Urim means lights. Thummim means judgments or decisions. So the lights of decisions. And the tradition amongst the Bible-believing Israelis and the tradition that I believe is that the high priest would take those two stones out, ask a question that is a yes or no or an either or, and then God causes one of those stones to light up. And that's the answer. And so that is why Eleazar the priest is being involved in the dividing up of the land. His request from God will decide which tribes live where. Joshua is involved because he is the commander-in-chief of the army, and he's overseeing everything. And then the heads of the fathers' houses, the Sanhedrin, the 70 leaders, plus probably the leaders of all the different tribes are going to be represented in that Sanhedrin. They're there to make sure everything is put into effect. So this is all leadership taking their lead from God. Verse 2, their inheritance was by lot, just as he who is had commanded by the hand of Moses for the 9 1/2 tribes. For Moses had given an inheritance to the 2 1/2 tribes beyond the Jordan, but to the Levites he gave no inheritance among them. For the people of Joseph are two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. Now, you remember, because I've repeated this several different times, Jacob loved Rachel, and Joseph was Rachel's firstborn son, and Jacob really wanted him to be the heir, but he couldn't make him the heir because he wasn't the firstborn son of all of the kids. That was Reuben. And then Reuben lost it, and it ends up going to the fourth son, Judah. So even though the legal heir among the tribes follows the tribe of Judah, Joseph had kind of gamed the system by revoking the sonship of Joseph and adopting Joseph's two sons as his own sons, which meant that he could give to Joseph a double portion by giving one portion to Manasseh and another portion to Ephraim. So interestingly enough, here when it comes time to start dividing up the areas of the Promised Land to the tribal groups, the first three tribes that get designated areas are Judah, which is the firstborn tribe legally, and Manasseh and Ephraim. Then everybody else will be given lots for what's left of the remaining areas. Okay, so the rest of the story says this. No portion was given to the Levites in the land. We keep having that repeated, but only cities to dwell in with their pasture lands and their livestock and their substance. So the people of Israel did as he who has commanded Moses. They allotted the land. Now we'll find out later that there has already been kind of a survey taken of territory. And so that territory has been divided up, probably based on natural land features like mountains and valleys and forests, and then some man-made features like walled cities and the property around those walled cities. So those sorts of features have been taken in consideration, and then boundaries will be placed based on that. And now comes time to divide up to specific tribal groups which areas. But we have a special request made at this point. Verse 6, and we're going to run out of time before we can get too far in this. Then the people of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal. So the Judah tribe comes forward and says, we're ready to start occupying our inheritance. Tell us where it is. Now, we'll go to book of Judges later and find out that they go as a group to kind of re-clear some of these areas so that they can start occupying them. But there's one guy, very famous, the oldest guy in the tribe of Judah, that steps forward at this time. Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to Joshua, you know what he who is said to Moses, the man of God, at Kadesh Barnea concerning you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of he who has sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought him word again as was in my heart. But my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt, yet I wholly followed he who is my God. And Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot is trodden shall be an inheritance for you and your children forever, because you have wholly followed he who is my God. Now, since we're running out of time, I'm going to shorten it, and then we'll come back and review this next time. Caleb basically says, I saw a piece of property on that time I was spying out the land that I want, Joshua, and it's been promised to me. Give it to me so I can clear it out and start living on it.